keep playing that rock and roll. Rick Derringer convinced me to take the job as road manager for Edgar Winter's White Trash. At first, I said no. "Rick, I want to be the drummer," I told him. He explained that the band was made up of old friends and that being the drummer was not an option. He continued, "You'll make contacts, meet people. Who knows what'll happen in the future?" He was right. Something very unexpected had happened. Bobby Ramirez, Edgar's drummer, had a problem. His hands looked like raw meat. The news from a hand specialist was not good. Bobby needed a small operation. That meant no playing at all for a month. We were on a break for a few weeks, but we did have one important gig coming up at the Capitol Theater in Port Chester, New York. No way Bobby could have the operation and be ready in time. I didn't want to be the drummer in Edgar's band. Bobby was a great drummer and one of my best friends, but I desperately wanted to play the gig. I was sure if I did a decent job, word would get out. I began an unrelenting campaign. The band's reaction was lukewarm at best. Bobby was my biggest supporter. He had heard me play, knew that I could cut it, and even offered to coach me. Their main concern was not about my ability as a drummer, but the loss of a road manager. "Come on," I pleaded. "Paul will be the road manager, and I'll get an extra roadie for the gig." I couldn't budge Edgar or Jerry. I even offered to pay for the extra roadie. No dice. I was bummed out big time, and I made sure they knew it. Bobby had the operation. During rehearsals, Edgar filled in as the drummer. A replacement still hadn't been chosen. Usually, I was expected to be around in case the band needed something. Not this time. I boycotted. Many nights, I went to my room, got high, and sulked. Edgar knew my routine. One night, rehearsal went very late. I was bored because there was nobody around to hang out with, and I took a Quaalude. For those of you too young to know what a Quaalude is, Google it. The lude had taken effect, and I was falling asleep when Edgar burst into my room.
"Okay, Neil, here's your chance."
"What?" I said incredulously.
"Now or never, Neil. Come try out for the band."
"You have to be fucking kidding me. Not now, Edgar." Of course, it was a setup, but now Edgar could say he gave me a chance. I knew the songs. I had secretly practiced them when the band was not around. Although my style was different than Bobby's, I was sure my playing would be more than sufficient. Not on Quaaludes. I played everything at half speed. My arms and legs just wouldn't move the way I wanted them to. It was a joke, and I was crushed. I sulked for days. Bobby Columbi from Blood, Sweat, and Tears got us an okay drummer. Like I said, he was okay. After the gig, most of the band admitted that I would have done a better job. Not long after the Capitol Theater, we were asked to play closing night at the Fillmore East. Bill Graham opened what would become the premier rock and roll concert venue on the east coast of the U.S. in March of 1968. It seated 2,700. The shows were multimedia, with psychedelic lighting projected onto screens behind the stage. During its short 3-year existence, just about everyone who was anyone played there. Big Brother and the Holding Company was the first to headline, and the Allman Brothers, the J. Geils Band, and Albert King were chosen for the closing show. It was to be held on June 27, 1971. We were billed as special guests along with Mountain, the Beach Boys, and Country Joe McDonald. Bill Graham had had enough. The Fillmore West, his other venue in San Francisco, had already closed, and he was tired of dealing with the week-to-week problems of an ongoing theatrical rock and roll venue. He published an open letter in the Village Voice in which he enumerated his reasons. Could have been written today. He complained about the corporate structure of the music business, the necessity of putting on acts with inferior talent, the packaging of acts for shows, and the abuse of the public and the press. It was invitation only, and a special event in the history of rock and roll. I'll never forget watching Bill Graham, out in front of the theater, feisty as ever, arguing with some hippies who thought he sold out. The concert was simulcast on two of New York's FM radio stations with some of the top DJs of the day, including WNEW's Scott Muni, in attendance. The Allman Brothers were the last to play, and their set was released as a part of the remastered version of Eat a Peach. The party continued at the 1 Fifth Avenue Hotel into the wee hours of the morning. It was a memorable night. Kenny Marshall was a friend of mine from the University of Vermont. He was pissed off that I hadn't chosen him to be in Edgar's road crew. Kenny was about 5'7", slightly built, and not athletic in any way. Being a roadie was very demanding, and I knew he would never be able to hack it. Kenny was aware of my concerns, but let me know that at some point, he expected a job. He came to visit me at Edgar's house in Rhinebeck early in August of 1971. We had a gig not too far away at Gaelic Park in the Bronx. I knew how badly Kenny wanted to be involved. I didn't think it would be a big deal to let him drive Edgar and a couple of guys in the band. I gave him detailed directions. Don't forget, no cell phones or GPS. And I told him to make sure to leave himself plenty of time. I left early to check out the venue. It was a medium-sized open-air gig with a good stage and sound system. Howard Stein was the promoter. We were sandwiched between Looking Glass, the opening act, and 10 Years After, the headliner. The concert was about to begin, and no Kenny. Looking Glass had about a 20-minute set. Howard was not happy. He came over to talk to me. If Edgar isn't here by the time Looking Glass go off stage, forget about it. What could I say? Their set ended, and Howard told my guys to break down Edgar's stuff. I begged for a little more time. 10 minutes, he barked back. I watched the clock. 10 minutes passed very quickly and still no Kenny. Howard gave the signal, and Paul and Ashley started to move our equipment off stage. At that moment, Kenny's car pulled up to the side of the stage and came to a screeching halt. Howard saw what was happening and told my crew to stop. Although he had a curfew, he let us do a much shortened set of 3 songs. I was livid. Kenny did his best to apologize, but I didn't want to hear it. Edgar wouldn't drive back to Rhinebeck with him. I asked Paul to take them back. Kenny loaded out with Ashley and some crew from Gaelic Park. Then, unbeknownst to me, Ashley took off with some chick. He told Kenny to drive the truck back to the Holiday Inn at LaGuardia Airport. Kenny had never driven a truck before, but for some reason decided to do it anyway. I went back to the house. My anger had subsided. I wasn't quite ready to forgive him, but when he told me what happened in the car, I had to have some pity on him. After having gotten lost, nobody trusted him, arguments ensued, and they kept going round in circles until Kenny took control again and got them to the gig. About 4 hours later, he called. I could hear from his voice that something was wrong. After what he described as an unbelievably harrowing drive, he arrived at the Holiday Inn. At the front entrance, there was a low concrete overhang. The truck was higher than the concrete, and Kenny proceeded to peel the top of the truck back just like it was a sardine can. Luckily, nobody was injured, and the equipment was intact, but the truck and the concrete awning were seriously damaged. Good thing for insurance companies. I told Kenny to go home and never call me again. We reminisce and laugh about it today. My days with Edgar came to an end. I don't remember if I quit, got fired, or it was mutual. Whatever the case, it was time for me to move on. The only trouble was, move on to what? I still wanted to be in the music business, and I hadn't given up on the idea of being a drummer. Then there was the unfinished business of college. I went back to school. I had withdrawn from UVM in a way that allowed me to come back without too much hassle. but within days, I knew that I wouldn't last long. It just wasn't the same. I had tasted the real world, and I liked what I saw.